Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with an absolute monster in the field of medicine, by trade. He's a pediatrician, but he has put together a body of work second to none on a tremendous amount of subjects. He is the creator, the inventor of, and he'll correct me. It's a vaccine, and I'll let him tell me what it's about, and who more appropriate to talk to about our current situation with COVID-19 and the possibilities of a vaccine coming in than someone who has been there on the front lines of other solutions. And again, we're not looking for miracles here, but whenever you need a sense of reason, Dr. Paul Offit is a perfect place to go. He is the author of Overkill: When Modern Medicine Goes Too Far, which is a must-get for everybody, especially now. Dr. Offit, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Doing terrific. What can you quickly tell us about the book and how it is relevant in today's world with what we're going through?
Right. So the book's called Overkill: When Modern Medicine Goes Too Far. It's about sort of those situations in modern medicine where there's abundant scientific evidence that we shouldn't be doing something, but we do it anyway. Such as treating fever, which can prolong or worsen illness. Such as you don't really need to finish the antibiotic course. We sort of go through those data. Such as, you know, that heart stents actually are of much less value than people think. The same thing's true of things like prostate cancer and thyroid cancer screening programs, which don't save lives. Breast cancer screening programs do, but much less so than people originally thought. So I think I sort of go through all of those data so people can be better advocates for their own health.
You know, you mentioned heart stents and my antennae went up. I have 5 heart stents. I know different situations for different cases and so forth. But what can you tell us about heart stents and how they've been misused, in medicine?
Yeah, so this was surprising to me, actually. If, for example, you have 2 arteries that supply your heart, if one of them gets blocked, which is to say more than a 70% blockage, then that can cause damage to the heart. It can present either as a heart attack, it can present as heart pain, i.e. angina. And so the thinking was pretty clear. If that's true, that wouldn't it make sense then for me to take this bare metal stent, put it in there to open up that area that's clogged? And so a study was done to answer the question, does it really work? Because pain is, sort of subjective. I mean, it's not like blood pressure, which you can measure. Pain is whatever anybody says it is. So there's always a sort of placebo response to that, meaning that now that you know you've had the heart stent, you may say that you're experiencing less pain because you've just gone through this procedure. So they did actually a sham stenting procedure. They took patients, a large number of patients, either put in a heart stent, or went through the process, meaning, threading catheters up into veins, up into the heart arteries, and then not putting in a stent. So the patient thought they had a stent. All those patients thought they had a stent. And so, but half didn't, half didn't. And then they went on to see what would happen. And the answer was there was no difference in the two. Now, they all had good medical management, meaning, make sure their blood pressure was down, make sure that their cholesterol levels were good. And so that was good enough. So the question is, why wouldn't that work? Why didn't it work? I mean, it made perfect sense. It would have worked. Why didn't it work? And the answer is that the large artery then supplies smaller and smaller arteries, which were also blocked. So you're not going to unblock those smaller and smaller arteries. And that's why there was no difference. And as a consequence, you're starting to see your major cardiac centers in this country stop doing heart stents as a result of this. So that was a surprise to me. I mean, it made sense that it would work. And it surprised me actually that it didn't seem to make much difference. It surprised me also that you could do the study that was done where there basically was a sham stenting procedure. Amazing.
Right. Rotavirus vaccine. My apologies. I went blank as I was. I'm not a medical person, but you had tremendous amount of notoriety off of that and so many other things. Where are we with COVID-19 and a vaccine in your estimation? Where do we stand? Where do you think we're going, and how far away is that vaccine?
Well, we're just at the beginning. I mean, we've only had this virus in hand for a few months, and we're still trying to figure out what the best ways to make the vaccine. I mean, are we going to sort of take it and take a whole virus and kill it like we do with the hepatitis A or polio vaccines? Are we going to weaken the virus like we do with the measles vaccine? Are we going to just take one protein from the virus, which is what we do, you know, the surface protein, which is what we do for the hepatitis B vaccine or the human papillomavirus vaccine? We're going to use a genetic approach for which we have no vaccines, so-called mRNA or DNA vaccines. We don't know any of that yet. We still are just starting to do sort of human trials for dose-ranging studies. I mean, we're going to have to eventually do a large prospective efficacy trial to make sure whether this works and it's safe, and that would have to be done in 10,000 and maybe tens of thousands of people, because you want to make sure it's as safe as you can make it before you give it to tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people. I can't imagine that happens within 2 years, but and that would be the fastest it could ever be made. And so we'll see how this plays out. Certainly the problem is not money or interest or number of companies who are interested. There's more than 40 companies across the globe that are doing this. I mean, our vaccine, the rotavirus vaccine, took 26 years to develop. That was pretty average for vaccines. So to say we could do this in 2 years would be remarkably fast.
You know, you're the type of person who's not afraid to disagree with your colleagues out there, with your peers. And you've been a straight talker from day one. What are we hearing now about COVID-19 that we shouldn't be hearing? What false information are we getting from the medical profession?
I'm not sure it's false, but I guess I'm a little disappointed how this is playing out. I mean, initially the plan was flatten the curve, make sure that the healthcare system is not overwhelmed, because there's this huge surge of patients who are requiring intensive care treatment. And you want to make sure you can take care of them as well as everybody else who requires acute and intensive care. I think we've done that. I mean, I think certainly in the state of Pennsylvania, where there's not a hospital that's not that has not had more discharges than admissions regarding this infection. So I think we did that. And now it seems like the rules changed. Now it's like, well, we want to make sure we don't have that sort of second surge. So, you know, stay in place, lock down. And I think that we should be able to handle this second surge much better if we just slowly start to walk out of our house. I mean, I think older people who have comorbidities or other problems should stay home. I think certainly anybody who's sick should stay home. I think we should wear masks out there in the workplace, at least for the moment, but start to get back to work, because we are facing the second part of this major public health problem, which is massive joblessness that's going to lead to, no doubt, massive homelessness among the poor and all the attendant health risks associated with food insecurity and, you know, and depression and suicide and child abuse and domestic violence was already starting to happen. That's the other part of this. I mean, if we avoid any new cases of coronavirus or any new deaths from coronavirus, then we should stay inside for the next 2 years. We can't do that. We need to get back out there. And I guess I wish there was sort of a clearer directive on exactly how we were going to do that. And there isn't.
Listen, tremendous work on your whole career has been tremendous. The book is wonderful. Everyone's got to get it. Overkill, When Modern Medicine Goes Too Far. Can you give us a social media site or a website where people could follow along with not only the book, but everything else that you're doing?
Yeah, so my website's paul-offit.com, and my Twitter is at Dr. Paul Offit. But I'm not a great social media maven, but, you know, I do, because I'm like an old guy, but, you know, I do the best I can.
Listen, you're great at things that are important. Keep up the wonderful work. You're really you're a breath of fresh air in a sea of doubt. Tremendous. Congratulations on the book and everything else that's gone right in your career. Keep up the great work.
Thanks so much, Frank. I appreciate it.
Dr. Paul Offit has been our very special guest. Please get the book, Overkill, When Modern Medicine Goes Too Far. And look into Dr. Offit. He is he's controversial, and he's controversial due to the vaccine folks that are out there. And I say this with the greatest respect, because I have a lot of friends that are anti-vax, but he's read the controversy. You know, he's disagreed with a lot of the assessments that came from the vaccine for the anti-vaccine folks and his colleagues. I mean, he's disagreed quite openly with his colleagues and his peers, and he's gotten tremendous amount of criticism. But look, it's well thought out. He is the creator, the inventor of rotavirus vaccine, and He believes, unfortunately, that we're a couple of years away from a vaccine, and his rotavirus vaccine took 26 years to perfect, I guess, if that's the proper term. And I don't know if there's any perfection in what we're talking about, but he's saying we're at least 2 years away there, which isn't that optimistic, but he does feel that we should be getting back slowly, getting back to normal. If I understood him correctly, that, you know, folks should be venturing outside, but folks should be forced to wear masks, which I agree with. You know, I was in a supermarket the other day, and I left early because I saw some real heavy set guy just coughing, and he was coughing. He had no mask on, no gloves on, and it just he looked so sick. And I avoided him, like, no pun intended, the plague, and I moved on. But and I got out of there as quickly as I could to get what we needed. But I looked like the Unabomber. I had a hood on, a mask on, glasses on, gloves on, and then as soon as I got out of there, I doused myself with sanitizer, and when I got home, I dumped everything into the washing machine, my shoes and everything else, and I jumped in the shower and I scrubbed down. And again, I'm taking it very seriously, and I don't want to get my family sick. But Dr. Paul Offit has been our very special guest, and the name of his book is Overkill: When Modern Medicine Goes Too Far. He's certainly someone you should look at, examine, whether you agree with him or disagree with him. He's one of those people you should put in your mix. Frank McKay signing off. Dr. Paul Offit has been our very special guest. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.